Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 260 for comics originally released on August 1st, 2012. Starting us off in DC is Justice League International number 12. This is the final issue of this series, unless, of course, you want to count the annual, which will be coming out later. It has the funeral of Rocket Red, solicited as a number of members resign from the team, who will be left, and, of course, with a final issue thing that kind of sets the scene of maybe the team disbands. Overall, I've been liking this series, but this really just hit a couple of unfortunate notes for me. I'm not a huge fan of any story that opens with action for the sake of action and then jumps back in time to what led up to the action. It's unfortunate because it's a fairly common writing crutch. If they want to start with a splash, but, you know, they don't have time to set it up, but if you don't set it up, it doesn't make sense. So, you know, what they do here is they start with a fight, then a couple of pages in, go back, you know, 30 minutes in time, maybe not even that long or whatever, for what led up, and then boom, this is where that gets inserted, and then we continue on. And that's just a personal thing. I don't care for that. I think it, when you've got to play around with a timeline like that to artificially, you know, start with a bang or build suspense or whatever, you know, and raise the how did this happen question, it's almost hiding a you know, possible weakness in the story that if you just laid it out linearly, it would have been boring. So it rubbed me the wrong way. You know, this was a decent issue, but the entire issue was a single long scene. And that really made it feel like very little happened in this issue, which is kind of unfair, because, I mean, while not a lot happens in this issue, it's that lack of cutaways, with the exception of the let's go back in time to what led up to the fight and then continue the fight. But there are no subplots, there's no anything else going on, so it really, I think, made the issue feel a lot, content-wise, lighter. And it's not like it had less stuff in it. It had the same number of pages as anything else or whatever. But it read differently. Because I think if you've got a comic like that Before Watchmen Minutemen that we talked about a few weeks ago, where, you know, every other page it seemed like you're cutting away, doing some other stuff, and, you know, talking about another character doing this, whatever. It felt like a lot more happened there. There's about as many panels, story, etc., between the two comics, probably. The other thing that kind of felt a little odd is this is all about the funeral of Rocket Red. That character died back in issue 7. And it really kind of, for me, emphasized how little story time we've had with these characters over that past year. Because that happened really at the tail end of their first story. And they're just now getting around to burying him, and granted, they've been busy, stuff's been going on. But really, if we've only had 2 weeks story time with these characters, I'd be a little surprised. And this is the last issue, again, except for that upcoming annual. And as far as last issues go, for me, this lacked any sense of finality, of closure. I mean, it literally ended on a to-be-continued-in-the-annual kind of a thing. Which, I mean, I get this is the last issue, but I mean, it felt a little odd on that aspect. And, I mean, again, this was a decent story. But, you know, while it wasn't bad, it wasn't great either. It was just kind of there, and for me, it hit a couple of things that just kind of, you know, didn't work great for me. But I don't want anyone to think, oh, it was a crappy comic or anything. It wasn't. It just, for me, it was kind of an average comic. I think it could have been better. I wish it had been better. But for the story they were telling, I mean, I kind of get why they did what they did. I mean, what were your thoughts, Bob?
I thought, similarly, not for maybe exactly the same reasons, I would say it was a mediocre comic, which is basically the same as average, but maybe a little harsher sounding. I haven't been reading this book since
I think I stopped getting it around issue 5 or 6, so I didn't see the issue that Rocket Red died in. So reading this comic, Funeral, you know, it's like, I thought, oh, he must have died in like issue 11 or something. They're just doing the funeral. I had no idea that this event had occurred 6 months ago. That seems kind of poor. But, you know, I read through this issue, and, you know, there was really nothing in this issue. It was like a standard, you know, they talk a lot. There was very little action other than the fight between Batman and this this guy whose brother also died. And I didn't see anything about this that made me say, wow, I should really go and buy those issues of JLI that I missed, because this sounds like I missed some really interesting stuff. It didn't. And, you know, like you said, at the end, it's not even, other than the fact that it says not the end, you know, it was kind of difficult just picking this up if I was picking this up off the stands. But it's saying don't miss the JLI annual. It's hard for me to say that this is the last issue, right? But I don't think it really is anyway, because they'll have another, some kind of Justice League book that'll come out. Just won't be called Justice League International, so they can have another number one. You know, it was like a 3. It was a 3 comic book to me. It was okay. Given that I knew who all these characters are, with the exception of OMAC, really. I mean, I haven't really read the OMAC series after the first issue or so, so I'm not that familiar with that character.
Mm-hmm.
I know who, and I don't really know who this guy is, but you know,
the
guy who's fighting Batman or whatever.
I don't think we'd seen him before.
Okay,
he's the brother of one of the villains they fought, and one of the villains who died, obviously.
Right. I mean, which I picked up, and you know, it's just I figured that much out from the context of the story, so it's like, okay, so this guy's really irritated that his brother died fighting the Justice League, so he's going berserk. You know, it's like, okay.
Was it just me, or did that whole bit with the brother read like they were building up to him joining the Justice League?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's like, oh, and then they have the whole redemption arc, you know, at the end. It's like, oh, well, you know, they yell at each other a little bit, and you're not going to send me to jail. Oh, that's really nice. Okay.
To me, that aspect of the story fell flat, because it really felt like they were building up to the cliche, and he joins the team, like you said, for the redemption arc, etc. And then he just doesn't. He doesn't go to jail anyways. He just walks off.
Well, which doesn't mean that he's not going to join them in the annual or in whatever the new series is.
True, but it seems like now would have been the time for him to say, but I want to make up for what my brother did. Hey, why don't I hang out with you, or something like that. For him to come back later and say, you know I fought you guys at the graveside and stuff, but you know, I've thought about it. I want to join you now. That seems like an afterthought, and it doesn't play as well.
Yeah. I will say I don't really care for this OMAC really giant fin look, but I kind of knew that. I haven't really read an entire issue with OMAC, and you know, reading this, I don't know that I'd want to. He didn't really do a whole lot in this issue.
A lot of the characters didn't really do a whole lot. It was very heavy on Batman. OMAC, I mean, I read the whole series. Some people loved it. I thought it was okay. Part of it was the art style for that series didn't work for me. But in terms of looks, the one that I still have problems with is Booster Gold. Specifically that W thing above the star. I look at that and I think like War Star or something. I certainly don't think Booster Gold.
Yeah.
So I would just dump that little blue stripe thing above the star and be done with it.
Anyway, I mean, it was an average superhero comic. I would not, while I wouldn't say it was a terrible comic, there's nothing about this that would make me recommend it to somebody to say, hey, you should go read Justice League International. It's just like, it was there.
I agree with that entirely, and I would actually almost go out of my way not to steer somebody away from it, but to not recommend it on the grounds that there is better stuff that Dan Jurgens and Aaron Lopresti and stuff have done that I think is a better introduction to them as writers, artists, etc., than this. And I would hate for somebody to read this and think, wow, you know, that Dan Jurgens, he just can't write or whatever, and then Lopresti's art, yeah, it's okay or whatever. Because I think there's comics that really showcase their skills better. But again, I wouldn't tell somebody to avoid this series or, hey, don't touch it with a 10-foot pole or anything. No, it's not bad. But yeah, that 3 rating, I think, hits it right on the head. It's an average comic. It did what it set out to do. It did it very, you know, competently for the most part. It hit a few storytelling techniques I don't personally care for. But, you know, it was not amateur hour. It was not, you know, anything of that sort. But, you know, it's something where I would have liked, I expected better from those creators.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing that, and the thing is, if you have that issue, you know, I picked it up, you know, if it was good, I would have gone and bought the annual. You know, it's like every issue of a comic is a selling opportunity because someone's going to pick the thing up, not just through momentum from having picked up other issues. So if any issue is not a selling point to get somebody to want to buy more, then it's a lost opportunity. And that's what this one really was, in my opinion. It was a lost opportunity because they could have got me to come and say, oh, wow, you know, that was cool. I really enjoyed that story. In fact, I want to go pick up those back issues and, you know, I'm going to go pick up the annual. In this case, it was like, okay, doesn't appear that I missed anything by not getting those issues.
Now, what's interesting about that is this is the second opportunity they've had to sell you on that Justice League International annual. The other one was Blue Beetle 11 that we talked about
right
2 weeks ago. And it sounds like neither has really gotten you excited enough to say, hey, I'll go get that. So that's 2 opportunities they've had to sell you on it. 3, if you count the fact that you had been getting Justice League International as a series at one point. So it's unfortunate they don't seem to be able to close that deal.
Time for something different. I think it's appropriate that they're canceling this series.
Yeah. Well, and given where the sales are, which is around little under 3,000, I think. It's 29,806 or whatever, and that series started back up around over 72,000 with the first issue. And granted, it went under 60 with the second and stuff. It's one of those where it had been drifting down far enough that it makes sense to put those creators on something else. I certainly can't fault DC for that decision.
Now, we ready to move on to Marvel?
Yeah.
Hawkeye number 1 by Matt Fraction and David, I'm going to say Aja, or it could be Aja. Not really sure.
How about Aha!
I liked this issue. However, I think that Matt Fraction overdid some of the dialect in this issue. It was just bugging me. I mean, maybe that's the dialect that somebody actually uses, but it was getting on my nerves by the end of the issue. That gangster guy saying bro every third word. That was really irritating.
Interesting. Okay. I can, looking through it now, I can see where he's using it like multiple times in a single word balloon. It's like, yeah, that's a little much.
I think you might have just like glossed over it and just read the non-bro words or something. You know, if you actually like read every one of them, it's like, it's bro.
That frankly did not faze me at all while I was reading it, but I agree that to me that's another writing crutch. Yeah. I've got to make him sound unique, so let's sprinkle it with a verbal tick and overuse it.
I like the story though. It was nice done in one story. I liked the art a lot, you know, and I liked it enough that I will, you know, I hadn't been ordering this. I picked this one up at the comic shop. I will now order the subsequent issues of this miniseries. So they sold me on the miniseries.
I'm
assuming that gangster is not coming back for the rest of it.
I mean, I've been a fan of Hawkeye since his first miniseries back in the 1980s. And I enjoyed his time when he was leading the West Coast Avengers, the Great Lakes Avengers, the Thunderbolts, and his solo adventures, his adventures with Mockingbird, the whole thing. He's a fun character. Team him up with Cap, it's a great kind of oil and water chemistry there. Now, what got me with this is the opening. Is we see him in action at some point, you know, and he's trying to, you know, he's gotten, I guess, thrown out of a high-rise or falling out of a high-rise at the very least. It looks like he's going out a window and shoots the arrow up and tries to land successfully, fails miserably, and winds up in the hospital for 6 weeks. And just a regular hospital, not even like an Avengers hospital or a S.H.I.E.L.D. hospital or anything. Which in and of itself seemed a little odd, because, I mean, if anyone figured out who he was, it could be bad. So he's coming out of that, and he's in there again 6 weeks, which seems like a really long time for him to be, you know, laid up, because he seems to be in every other issue of every other Avenger title. He makes a comment as he's getting out of the cab, or there's a caption of, "Try out this new leg of mine, I guess," when he's having to walk for a bit. And I'm like, what the hell is that? So now, in addition to being like 90% deaf, having practically gone blind in his last miniseries, does he now have like an artificial leg or something? What's going on? No explanation for that line whatsoever, so who knows?
I just took that to be he got busted up, so he got, you know, either pins or, you know, maybe an artificial kneecap put in, or, you know, who knows?
That's my point. Who knows? You know, and he doesn't seem to slow him down at all. And, I mean, I could see if they wanted to do the whole, just like Batman, he's gotten banged up, he's got scars all over himself, every bone has been broken multiple times, he's got the pins, the rods, he's like an erector set internally. I mean, okay, fine, if they want to go that way, I think it's a mistake, but okay. There were a couple of places where they flashed forward, flashed back, that kind of a deal, with no real explanation, that it took me a little bit to, oh, that's what's going on with him and the dog and all that stuff. The solicitation said that this was going to be with ex-Young Avenger Kate Bishop by his side. He's out to prove he's one of Earth's mightiest heroes. And he wasn't really proving himself as one of Earth's mightiest heroes. To me, this was much more of an urban Avenger kind of a story, and it was a good one for that. There was no Kate Bishop. She was the Hawkeye from the Young Avengers, of course. So, solicit was wrong on both counts there. I like how they set up Hawkeye with his kind of home away from the Avengers mansion thing, and how, you know, he's doing all this stuff to help these people, as much to help them as, you know, they get together every night, do a, you know, cookout or whatever, and he's able to eat that way and hang out with people. I mean, that, to me, that's not a bad setup for the character. Seeing as he's often been portrayed as a lot of a loner in his solo adventures, even though he often leads teams, which is kind of ironic. Again, this sets him up in a particular way, and I was okay with that. Again, as far as like a street-level Avenger kind of a title goes, this worked. Now, whether people want a street-level Avenger title, another matter entirely. I'm not so sure. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Again, I liked a lot of aspects of this. This isn't the first solo title Hawkeye has had. It probably won't be his last. I found it very interesting you said that you were on board for this mini-series. Because this is an ongoing title.
Aha!
Now,
I thought it was a miniseries.
It may well turn out to be one. I mean, if this makes it past issue 12, frankly, I'll be surprised. Not because of anything in this issue. I like this issue. I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. It was something that used the character well and had a unique feel to it within the Marvel Universe. But how many of their titles really make it past 12 these days? Before getting rebooted or whatever.
Well, realistically, I'll read this until David Aja, you know, is gone on it. Which, how many times does an artist stick with an issue for more than 6 or 8 issues? I mean, sometimes they do, but
yeah.
I mean, he stuck with Iron Fist, and I mean, that's the thing. I mean, when they did when Fraction wrote Iron Fist, right?
Yeah.
That one title. So when the two of them were doing Iron Fist, I really liked Iron Fist. And then when that team kind of broke up, that title just kind of went off the rails for me pretty quickly.
I didn't feel that way on that title in terms of it going off the rails, but I can understand what you're saying. I think this team clicks well together. They both were telling the same story, and I liked that. And, you know, as a first issue went, I thought they succeeded in a lot of things. They, again, set up the character, the status quo, etc. Didn't really give a solid sense of where the series is going to go direction-wise. But, you know, I think there's going to be, just like with Iron Fist, a lot of people who love this title other people who either don't get it because they're not buying it or don't get it because they bought it and just don't get it. But I could also see where some people might feel this is lacking in certain areas, particularly if they had gone in with the expectation set by the solicit of he's got a sidekick, he's out to prove himself on par with, you know, Iron Man, Cap, Thor, and these other, you know, gods and legends and the Avengers and stuff. It comes down to what do you expect out of this? I mean, if you go in thinking it's going to be one thing and it turns out not to be, which again, solicit versus what we got, I think was the case, people could be very disappointed. If you go in saying, hey, let's see what this is and do I like it or not, people could be very happy with this. I mean, for me, this was a 4 out of 5. It was enjoyable. I'm certainly looking forward to what's going to happen next. I like the character, and I thought they stayed true to the character. I loved the bit where he was talking about, you know, how Cap really brings out the best in people, and, you know, Cap's not around right now. It really kind of shows a lot of how Hawkeye's mind kind of works at times. I'm going to be curious to see where they go with this and how long the series survives.
Well, I didn't read the solicit. I mean, or when I read the solicit, it wasn't enough to get me to buy it. But, you know, I like the issue. It's enough to get me to pick the series up. It was a 4 out of 5. It would have been a 5 out of 5 had the bro dialogue not turned me off. Yeah, so this has a potential, you know, to get better. And interesting on your point about Iron Fist, though, because I think what that indicates to me is when a particular creative team on a title has a very strong imprint on that title, and then they switch up creative teams, and it gets a very different look and feel, or look and or feel, let's say, there's a very strong potential that you're going to turn off people who were kind of in love with that previous way on the series. And that also happens in the other direction when, you know, something's going along and a new team comes in and they go out of their way to make a separate imprint on the story just to kind of make their mark on it. But, you know, switching things up like that, creatively, I can understand why creators want to do it, but there's a risk of giving a big decision point to people who had been loving the old one, the old way. I can see why they reboot series all the time, though. You know, it's like you start with a fresh start.
Yes and no, because I think one of the things that's going to come down with the Marvel Now stuff is we're starting to get some actual information about these titles. And, you know, Thor in space or whatever, and, you know, Banner and the Hulk working together or whatever. These are different takes on these characters. And the fact that they're a new number one underscores the decision point, but I think even if they had continued the numbering, some people would have said, you know, I had been liking this existing title, they're going in a new direction, I'm off, or it was okay before, but wow, this new direction sounds exciting, I'm on. The fact that you're switching gears and direction, tone, and style, in addition to creators, and sometimes title as well as issue number, you know, gives so many reasons for that decision point to be so obvious. And I think Marvel is counting on that, because they're hoping that these new things are just so much more exciting than everything else they've ever tried before on the character, to get people going. But I think it's, to me, less an issue of are they doing a new take on a character or title so much as how do they transition to it. If I go from one issue to the next and suddenly it's just night and day difference, what the hell happened? That rubs me the wrong way, whereas if they smoothly transition in a believable manner and time frame from how it was to how they want it to be, that's cool. You know, there have been a couple of times where there have been creator shifts on titles that were just unbelievably smooth. The writer picked up from where the other one left off in the course of a couple issues, had reworked things naturally to how he wanted it, and then just ran with that. There have been others where, you know, You're at the Avengers Mansion. Suddenly, a Quinjet plows into the thing. The Jack of Hearts blows up. She-Hulk rips the Vision in half. And now things are all suddenly different. And it's like, wow, that's a big shake-up on the Avengers or whatever out of the blue. And it's a little jarring, whatever. I think there are some ways that are better than others to go from take that may or may not have been working to new creator who wants to do his own take that may or may not work. And I think Marvel's got a number of opportunities to get it right and get it wrong with the Marvel Now stuff. To me, the Hawkeye stuff here pretty much did it right because it's not like it was coming off the heels of a previous Hawkeye series, or at least not an immediately previous one. The Hawkeye Mockingbird had been long enough ago that it's kind of faded to the background. But if it had been immediately after he was doing the whole super spy thing with Mockingbird, and then suddenly it's, he's just a street-level guy, you know, kind of a thing. He'd been in the hospital 6 weeks or whatever. I would have felt, that seems a little odd. So, but I see what you're saying with creators wanting to tell their story their way and do their brilliant take on a character. It seems like back in the 70s and 80s and around that time frame, writers would come on board and these characters would have been established enough that they just kind of ran with the personalities and stuff they had. They'd tell their own stories, but not feel the need to almost reinvent the character or the quote-unquote take on the character.
Well, Fraction did the new Defender series, right?
Yeah.
See, the difference here, I mean, when he did Defenders, it felt to me like he was taking characters that I knew and grafting a different enough personality onto them that it bothered me. And I didn't get that feeling with Hawkeye.
Yes. His situation changed, but he did not.
Right. I did not get the feeling that he had had a personality transplant, which I did feel had occurred with Iron Fist and Doctor Strange when I read that first issue of Defenders.
Certainly with Iron Fist, less so with Strange, but, well, no, I guess you're right.
Becoming a womanizer.
Yeah, yeah, I was just remembering that part. You're right.
Some people say, oh, well, that didn't carry through. Well, I don't know, because it turned me off enough that I didn't pick up issue 2 of the Defenders.
But if it didn't carry through, why have it at all? Why do that transplant and have it fail or just get ignored? To me, that's a bad planning for a writer.
But he did a good job here because, I mean, there's all this switch up, but, you know, I'm not reading all those Defenders titles. I mean, Avengers, rather. So I don't necessarily get the discontinuity you get that he's in the hospital for 6 weeks. So how is he in these, you know, three or four different Avengers titles or whatever that he's in? Because I don't read any of those. So it's just like I read this story as kind of a self-contained entity and liked it. And again, the Clint Barton really felt in line with the character that I knew with some expanding points that made sense.
Well, and this goes back to something we've talked about a lot of times, both on the show and certainly on the previous teleconferences over the years, of how people who are reading fewer titles are going to have a different reading experience than people who are reading a ton of titles. Both because if you're reading fewer, you're going to remember things within those titles, I think, easier than if you're reading, like, I mean, I'm getting about literally 40 or 50 new comics a week. So some story elements, it takes me a little bit, oh yeah, that's what they did with Doctor Strange. You know, it doesn't just jump to mind. Whereas somebody who's reading Defenders and maybe three or four other titles or whatever, oh yeah, how could they forget? And like you said, the discontinuity between titles, if you're not reading Cap and Hawkeye, or what's going on in the Avengers, New Avengers, or, you know, half a dozen of these other books. Yeah, obviously those things didn't happen for you, so your continuity for the Marvel Universe is different than mine. I'm going to go with, since I'm reading more, mine's more accurate, but who cares? it's a perspective thing. And it's something, though, that writers, editors, creators need to keep in mind that there's both poles of the reader spectrum and stuff, and stories need to work for both. Because if it doesn't work for people who are newer readers or read less or whatever, you know, on that end of, really, I guess it's two axes, the read more, read less, and the new reader, established reader. If you're not geared towards the newer reader or the person not reading everything, you're going to lose people. It lacks accessibility. Yet, if you can't keep the other quadrant happy of those who read a lot and read everything, because they read a lot, you don't want to turn those off, because that's, to a certain extent, your bread and butter. That's the equivalent of a whale at a casino, where it's like, this guy just spends a lot of money, so let's give him the buffet, the comp, the room, etc., because we make money on him. We want him here. There are times where I think they throw the baby out with the bathwater, chasing after those new readers who don't buy a whole lot, and don't have the longevity on the title, and therefore quicker to drop the title if they don't like it. You know, it's a definite balancing act, and I think it's very possible and frankly not all that difficult to please all of those readers in that respect. Keep things accessible, keep things explained, have every issue kind of justify its existence and sell the next issue, and you should be able to keep pretty much everybody happy on that score. But, you know, we'll see how other new titles, because we're going to be seeing a lot of new number ones at Marvel over the next couple of months. We'll see how those all do.
Yep, I agree.
Shall we move on to our next book?
Sure. Love and Capes, What to Expect, number one.
I'm a huge fan of Tom Zoller and Love and Capes. We've reviewed this property three times. Once back when it was quarterly, and an issue of two of the miniseries. And I think there have only been the two miniseries, but I mean, we've been reading the whole thing. Every time we've reviewed it, both of us have given us a 5 out of 5 rating. So for me, the title set kind of a high bar, and I expect great things from it. And I'm happy to say this one didn't let me down at all. I was very pleased with this. This is a $3.99 comic, standard price from IDW. In that, we get 24 pages of content. One of those pages is a splash page. One of those pages has a 2x2 grid on top and one big panel on the bottom. Every other page has 8 panels per page. But Zoller's storytelling style has been this way throughout. And while it's not a strict grid, because they're offset a little, whatever, you can almost, not always, but typically read the first 4, get a story beat, the next 4, get a story beat, and it flows, it reads great. The amount of story moments, of plot beats, etc., that Zoller packs into an issue without it being the least bit overwhelming, without it seeming, gosh, this is so wordy, or anything of the sort, without the typical pitfalls of, wait, what's going on, who are these characters, etc., I mean, he introduces characters by name. It's easy to follow what's going on. You quickly get the feel for who these characters are, even if I think you haven't read it. He has got the storytelling style down pat. I mean, he's somebody I think people should be reading his comics as creators with an eye towards, how did he do this? How did he keep this so accessible? Now, typically in the past, the humor has been, and the topics have been around, you know, the superheroics and, you know, aspects of that. Here, we're shifting, like the last issue shifted more towards the couple getting married and those issues. Now it's around the parents-to-be and issues around that. And it's just wonderfully done, and it touches kind of occasionally on the unique concerns of a superhero having a child and stuff. This is just, you know, from my perspective, a truly amazing all-ages title that I think you could put in front of pretty much anybody of any age, and I mean, not going to say everyone would love it, but I think everyone would be able to understand it, get it, and, you know, hopefully I think most people would enjoy it. I think it's just a great book. It has fun with the superhero genre without making fun of the superhero genre, and it's a very fine line to walk. And again, Zoller just does a great job. What were your thoughts?
I agree with most of that. However, while this typically has been a 5 out of 5 for me, and I really like this issue, it really didn't make it to the 5 out of 5 for me. I think that he spent a little bit too much time on the standard stuff where I've seen it so many times before, of like, you know, taunting the pregnant woman with caffeine and, oh, I can't drink now, and these kinds of things. I was hoping to see something a little different. He kind of went back to the well on too many familiar standard story tropes in this issue for me to get the 5.
Really?
But it was well done. I enjoyed the story. A lot of what you say, I agree with, you know, the fact that you get a lot of story. It's a very clear story. You're not left wondering who the people are. There's very good characterizations and things like that. I really enjoyed the Doc Karma thing, you know, with bringing in the alternate world version and things like that. It's just some of this, I just get weary of, you know, the, you know, gee, I can't drink caffeine. I can't drink, et cetera, et cetera.
Which is interesting because, I mean, to me that made sense and didn't seem like it was overplayed or anything. It might have been fun for, you know, Mark to point out, you know, hey, honey, you can't eat this, that, or the other either, because that's something that doesn't work with his body chemistry, you know.
Yeah.
So I think there, I mean, I could see where there were some other opportunities there. For me, the fact that he was able to do more of almost this, I don't say the standard sitcom stuff, but what you consider time-worn tropes or whatever, to go for the less genre humor and the more mainstream humor, I thought was great. You know, I like the fact that he was able to do a lot of things that the fact that Mark is essentially a Superman-type character didn't matter. You know, I like how they balance that stuff. This is a title that, I mean, the basic concept is Love and Capes is just that, Love and Capes. It's a romantic comedy set in a superhero world. It's essentially Lois and Clark mixed with Mad About You or something along those lines. If you want to check out this series, you can start anywhere, literally. I would recommend starting at the beginning. And I say that not because you have to, you don't. You, again, start anywhere. It's an amazingly accessible series. This issue in and of itself introduces pretty much the entire cast of regular and recurring characters. But by starting at the beginning, you get to see the characters grow. When you get to this point where they're having the pregnancy and all that stuff, you've gotten to know and care about the characters, and I think it plays better than, hey, this is just some random couple. And frankly, it's not like there's a bazillion issues or something out there. I think all said and done, it's maybe 24 issues total, thereabouts.
Yeah, probably about that.
And it's all great stuff. So for me, definite 5 out of 5. Highly recommend.
And 4 here. Okay. But still highly recommended.
Broke the streak of the perfect 5 out of 5s from us, though. Oh.
Yeah.
It's got to happen sooner or later.
I think it maybe for me it's because when Janine was pregnant, she didn't do those things, but she didn't whine about it. So, you know, it's like I see too many of these things, you know, that I tend to probably watch more of them than you do because Janine likes to watch such kind of shows, yeah. And I'm in the room. It's like every time someone's pregnant, it's like the same set of things.
Well, I thought it was more Abby realizing she couldn't have it, not so much whining about it.
Yeah, well, and as does every female character that ever gets pregnant. I don't know, I wouldn't say every, because I haven't seen every, but a lot.
Fair enough.
But again, you know, different backgrounds on where you're coming from, you know, to see the issue, so.
Oh, totally. What you bring in is as important as what they put on the page. Definitely colors the reading experience.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that it's unrealistic. It is. I'm sure it's realistic. It's just, you know, okay.
Well, the whole caffeine part. Yeah, some of the other stuff, the multiple worlds, yeah, we could argue.
Yeah. Okay. So, any other books this week that chimed your bell?
Let's see. I read a ton. I've read pretty much everything that came in. Flipping through, see if there was anything that was just, wow, that was amazing. Continuing to like Hypernaturals. I think that's a fun series. I'm really looking forward to seeing where that goes. Mind the Gap continues to be interesting, where they're trying to actually tell a deeper story with actual mystery and all of that stuff. I can't really tell if the first X-Men is in continuity or not. I think it is, but I'm not positive. They made some interesting character changes in Avengers Academy, which I liked. Continuing to enjoy World's Finest with Huntress and Power Girl.
How about, did you read Animal Man? Steve Pugh art finally started.
And I like that better than Travel Foreman. His style, I mean, is one that doesn't tend to is not within my taste normally. This was a much more cleaner kind of a line work and stuff. Buddy looks a little different, but, you know, again, different artist, I expect that. So I think this style works in the book. I'm not going to say it's necessarily the one I would have said is, ooh, this is the optimal art style. It's frankly, I think Steve Hugh could pretty much draw almost anything he'd like to, and I'd be happy with it. He's got a good style, and I think it fits most properties.
I was interested to see the line style that he has, because, you know, he did the fully painted style on things like Hot Wire.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting to see that style on this book, because that's a much more time-intensive style, and I don't know that he'd be able to do a monthly book doing that style. So this style, while not the fully painted style, I was very happy with.
Yeah. No, he's a good artist. It worked well.
Very cool.
Anything else? Does that do it?
Does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Batman number 12 from DC, Fantastic Four number 609 from Marvel, and Archer and Armstrong number 1 from Valiant Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.